Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast, coming to you from the headquarters of the National Federation of the Blind in Baltimore.
Hello and welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast. This is Anil Lewis and I'm here with
Chris Danielson.
Man, it seems like it's been so long since we had a conversation, but it's only been last month, right?
I know. Yeah. I tell you, it's strange how that works. On the other hand, 2016 has just flown by for me. I don't know about for you.
It's all over.
It's a big blur.
I'm going to kind of miss 2016. There's some really fun stuff happened this year.
Yeah, no, it really did. A lot of good things going on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to 2017.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I tell you what I'm not looking forward to, though. The weather right now.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, as a guy who just had to move in basically a winter mix storm, you know, I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, what a great way to start the joys of home ownership. You did have to move
exactly.
In that ice storm, didn't you?
Yeah, because it was Saturday and the movers were late because of the big accident that was caused by here in Baltimore.
The 40-car pileup.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I heard that made international news.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a tanker that skidded. And then flipped and blew up. It was like something out of a Hollywood movie, but unfortunately it was real.
My
movers got trapped behind it. So we got started late, and then we were dealing with the weather. But anyway, enough about my personal problems.
It's only the beginning. Welcome to the joy of home ownership. But it's just like that. The bad weather happens, and people think that they can drive like they do in normal weather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just like traveling in this weather. You know, for our listeners, you may not know, but Chris and I, we're both, you know, very much Southern gentlemen.
Right.
We come from a climate that is fairly snowless for the most part. But being here in Baltimore, we've had to engage in the travel of snow and ice. And the ice is not too unfamiliar in Atlanta, but this snow is something else.
I tell you what, especially when it's really deep. I mean, deep snow to me is probably like fog is to a sighted person. it just obscures everything.
That's a good analogy.
It's hard to find your pavements, your sidewalks, your curbs, you know, all the normal cane clues that you would use if the snow is very deep. And so it's always entertaining entertaining is a positive word that I'll use to try to navigate in deep snow. And we do have it occasionally here in Baltimore. Those who traveled up to Washington Seminar last February, yes, we'll remember that we were in the midst of a huge blizzard that put two feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah, so. We have to be respectful of those who like this snow, but I'm going to tell you, I'm not a big fan. I think that those who love snow should have to go to visit it. I don't think it should be delivered.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I am not dreaming of a white Christmas, hate to say.
I love the analogy you had about traveling in the fog as a sighted person. And I agree, both of us being graduates of the Louisiana Center for the Blind, trust me, our training did not include snow travel. And I know that people in Colorado Center and Blind Incorporated do that as their like badge of honor. Well, we can travel in the snow.
Right. And being in the South, we never really had to travel in the snow even when there was, because in a southern city, 2 inches of snow on the ground and the whole city shuts down.
And I
Nobody
love that.
Goes anywhere.
I love that. That's what it means. To me, snow means stay at home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
exactly.
Luckily for us, we do have our Federation family of individuals who have graduated from centers that teach them to be competent travelers in the snow, because coming here, that's how I learned, talking to individuals who had really developed a skill set around it. And there is a different finesse that you have to use if you're really going to be successful in traveling in that snowy environment.
Absolutely. And it's so fortunate because we're always learning, even if we've had the formal training. We don't always pick up everything we need to know. And that's the great thing about the Federation family is that we're always learning from each other.
Exactly.
We're always learning from each other's experiences and giving people advice. Whether it's about travel or home ownership or any number of things that we're getting good advice about. And that's really the advantage of a support network of blind people. And it's one of the powerful things about our organization being of blind people.
Exactly. So Federation family, let's get ready because winter is here. And this podcast, we have the opportunity to talk about some other informal learning that took place during our World Blind Union, and we'll have our presidential privilege talking about some informal interaction of an impact that the president's had, you know, just through living the life that he wants. And we'll also be talking a little bit about Uber. Well, probably a lot more about Uber, this particular segment, than most in the news. So
right.
Let's just go ahead and get it started. So I had the opportunity to talk to Gary Wunder, who's the president of the NFB of Missouri and our editor for our NFB Braille Monitor, during our recent board meeting. And it was a really interesting discussion as he told me some of the informal things that took place during the recent hosting of the World Blind Union. So if you allow me, let's just go ahead and segue into that segment.
Yeah, let's do it. I think this will be fascinating how our other friends of the world responded to the way we do things in the National Federation of the Blind. So let's hear it.
Excellent.
Hi, this is Anil Lewis, and you're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I have the pleasure of sitting here to talk with one of my mentors, really one of my idols in the National Federation of the Blind, Mr. Gary Wunder. Gary, how you doing?
I'm doing very well.
For those of you in podcast world who don't know Gary Wunder is the editor of the National Federation of the Blind's monthly Chronicle, the Braille Monitor, and also the president of the NFB of Missouri. So I want to take a little bit of time for you guys to get to know him as much as you can in the time that we have, but I think that even with this short period of time, you come to appreciate him for what he brings to the organization as much as I do. So Gary, you joined the Federation when?
I joined when I was 16.
Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, I didn't really have any intention of joining an organization of blind people. I simply wanted some information about guide dogs, and it seemed to me that the best way to get information about guide dogs was to visit some with blind people. So I found a guy who knew about guide dogs, and I called him up, and he'd tell me a little bit about guide dogs, and after a while, he'd start saying, you know, it's really important that you groom your guide dogs. I mean, when you take them to important places like conventions of the National Federation of the Blind, where you meet congressmen and senators and other things, it's really best that your dog look his very best.
Hold on a second. You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the thing I find really interesting is, of course, those of you who know the National Federation of the Blind, many people feel that we have a reputation that we don't really endorse the use of guide dogs. So it's really interesting to hear that even back when you joined that we were still proactively including members that use long white canes and guide dogs.
Oh, absolutely. I never heard anything except guide dog advocacy when I joined and getting the rights for guide dog users. In fact, I was one of the people who was in the gallery when our state of Missouri passed the Model White Cane Act, which ensured the rights of guide dog users.
That's excellent.
One of our major arguments.
So you met this guy.
Yeah. So every time I'd get him talking about guide dogs, he'd veer off and talk about the Federation. I'd say, well, how do you do obedience with your dog? And he'd say, well, you make it to come and sit and stay and fetch. And, of course, you got to do this even when you're busy at a convention of the Federation. And finally, I got tired of hearing about this Federation. So I asked him to tell me about another guy or two that might be willing to talk with me about guide dogs, and I framed it as, I know you're much too busy to take all of my questions. And so he said, sure, I know of a guy. He said he's closer to your age than I am. You'd probably enjoy talking to him. He's a law student. Maybe one day you'll be a law student. So I call this guy up, and he starts telling me about his German Shepherd named Bell and how wonderful the dog is. And he says, you know, I could talk to you all day about her, but there's nothing like being able to see her. If you want to see her, we're going to have a meeting next Friday night of the National Federation of the Blind. You could come to the meeting. Turned out he was the chapter president. And after my protests, I went to a meeting, and that's how it started.
Wow, that's excellent. I'm so glad this guy flim-flammed you. No, I'm kidding, not flim-flam. That's really good that he was able to really meet you where you were, get you involved around something that you're interested in, and then as a result, we're able to capitalize on your talents as a member of the National Federation of the Blind.
Well, it's all because I loved him and I respected him and I wanted him to love and respect me, and if he thought the meetings were worth going to, I endured enough of them that I finally came to the conclusion they were worth going to.
That's excellent.
It wasn't love at first sight or anything like that. It grew on me, what we do.
Well, beautiful. And hopefully it's still growing.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I know it is. I mean, you're the president of our National Federation of the Blind of Missouri.
Yep.
How's that going for you?
Oh, it's going good. I've actually had a long enough run at that I'm going to give it up and not run for re-election. So there'll be a change of leadership in Missouri. but it will mean that instead of having to coordinate most of what goes on, maybe I'll let somebody choose what they want me to work on intensely. Rather than being the bottleneck for everything, I'll take my assignment as I'm given them, and it'll be fun.
That's excellent. So the student becomes the teacher, and the teacher becomes the student.
Exactly.
And I know you've done a good job of building really good potential leaders there, so I can't wait to see who becomes your successor and how that plays out. But you talked about how you're going to start doing whatever people tell you. One of the things I love that you've been told to do is to edit the National Federation of the Blind Braille Monitor. And how long have you been doing that?
I started it in June of 2010, actually, probably more accurate to say July of 2010. Mm-hmm. I was hired on the 28th of June, and of course we had our national convention, so my first job was to write the convention roundup. And I had always enjoyed reading the convention roundup, but never realized what kind of work it actually took to write it and to try to make it sound more interesting than a set of minutes, make it feel to people who weren't there like they were there, and to make people who read it say, yeah, I'm glad I was there. And it was quite a challenge. The roundup is always a challenge.
I think you're stepping up to that challenge, though, and I do enjoy reading the Braille Monitor, and I love the way that your editorial notes before the articles really kind of set a tone that really actually accomplishes exactly what you said. It makes you feel like you're actually there, and whatever the article is explaining or the experience that it's talking about, your editorial notes kind of put you in that place where, okay, now I can experience what's coming next.
Well, that's certainly what we hope with the editorial note. I like to explain a little bit about who the author is and what their history is, but I also like to set the tone. And I think we're really blessed to have a publication like the Braille Monitor. It's really something to read about the epiphanies where people come to realize that blindness, the thing they once thought of as a tragic condition, ends up becoming the nuisance or the inconvenience. It's great when they offer solutions to problems that you didn't know were out there. And it's great when they bring problems and say, jointly, we have to figure out a solution. I think the thing I loved was that the Braille Monitor and the Federation taught me to think out of the box and be creative in finding solutions. But it also told me that I wasn't responsible for finding all the solutions, that I could be an inventor, but I didn't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. That's awesome. And all the things that you're saying, I think, kind of culminate into one experience I want you to share with our listeners. You talk about setting the tone, and I know you can do that with the stories that you tell. But you also talk about what you've learned through the Federation. And I'd love for you to explain the scenario that you described. Recently, we hosted the meeting of the General Assembly of the World Blind Union. And the National Federation of the Blind was very active in the planning of that. So tell the story about the blind members of the Federation volunteering during that experience.
Well, one of the things that the people from the World Blind Union were concerned about was that we have enough people who would be available to help them. I mean, they're coming to a strange country, a city they've never been in, a hotel they've never been in. And kind of what they expected was that we would have a bunch of sighted volunteers to help them. And we agreed that we would indeed have a number of volunteers to help them. And so when you found someone who needed help, it wasn't at all uncommon to walk up to them and they would say, may I take your arm? And you would say yes, and you'd start walking along and they would say, I hear a clicking cane. We must be near a blind person. And I would say, well, that's my cane. And they would stop.
Wow.
And they would say, what are you doing? You know, is this some kind of joke? And I said, it's no kind of joke. I said, I thought I had a sighted guide. And I said, no, you have a human guide. Well, how do you expect to guide me if you're blind? And I said, well, I've mapped out the hotel. I know where we're going. I'm using my cane in a wide enough arc that it's covering the both of us. And they would grab a hold of my arm, and we would go. And I would meet these people day after day. And with each day, I would find that they needed me less and less. So in those places that they had come to map out in their minds, in those places where they felt safe, in those places where they felt independent, they would let go of my arm, but this time not in disgust, but I can do this.
Wow.
And it was great.
Very
wow.
Cool.
Yeah, it was very good.
That was the World Blind Union?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we're going to have to record this all over again because we have a partner here that joined our podcast. No, I'm kidding. This is going to be great. I'm going to keep this on the air. Now, who is this? Is this Mary Ellen?
Yes.
Okay, so no, go away. Come on back here. Yeah. So Gary Wonder and I were sitting here recording this episode for the podcast, and I think it's also important, since we're talking about the World Blind Union, that our Canadian friend just happened by, Mary Ellen Gabias, ladies and gentlemen. Mary Ellen, you want to tell people who you are and why you're here?
I'm Mary Ellen Gabias. I am a member of the board of directors of the American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults. I'm also the president of the Canadian Federation of the Blind.
Right. And the story that Gary was just telling us, I mean, it's just an impactful story because it speaks to why the National Federation of the Blind and our philosophy has the impact that it has. Just through a simple act of serving as an escort or a docent, you're able to empower people with that self-confidence to make them really feel comfortable traveling on their own. And I think that that's just powerful.
One of the things that we did that people were sort of unfamiliar with that helped them travel on their own was we were talking signs. Human talking signs. Mm-hmm. So we would say, General Assembly, right this way, welcome to the General Assembly. And they were amazed by this. Because
I heard that originally some people were kind of disgusted that you had blind people out there just yelling at people.
That is sort of what they thought. And they said, you know, so if I go past you, the room is down and on my left. And then they would hear somebody else. And then they thought it was pretty cool. Then we were able to enlist them to join with us. So we would say, help make us look even better. For instance, I only know English, but you understand what I'm saying. Would you say it with me in German?
Wow.
In German? Yeah. So all of a sudden, the person who was a little bumfuzzled by the idea that we were doing this was chanting right along with us, General Assembly, right this way.
That's
welcome
excellent.
To the General Assembly.
And an organic way of making an accommodation. So we were multilingual talking signs at the World Blind Union.
Exactly. That's... And it made us look like we had prepared for multilingual.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's outstanding. I could talk to you all day, Gary, but I'm sorry we don't have all day. And I'm so pleased that my friend Mary Ellen stopped by, because that just makes it even that much better. Just for you guys to recognize, we're recording this at the time that the National Board of Directors for the National Federation of the Blind are meeting, along with the Jacobus Timbrook Foundation Board, the Action Fund Board of Directors, and is there another group?
Not that I'm aware of. It's a pretty full room and a lot of exciting discussions going on.
It's like one big, huge family reunion.
It is, and many things I can take back to Canada. Blind Canadians are always empowered by learning what's going on here and what the Federation has to say is making a difference in Canada, too.
That's beautiful. I hope everyone recognizes that you never know what little parts you do and how they impact people. So go out there and live the lives you want. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Hello, my name is Gary Wonder. I'm the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Missouri, the editor of the Braille Monitor magazine, and you are listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
We're back, and I really enjoyed talking to Gary. Gary's one of my favorite people in the Federation. His
Absolutely.
Storytelling abilities are really good, and the epiphanies, you know, that he expressed that took place just organically at the World Blind Union were really empowering.
Well, you know, it was such a powerful experience. I had the opportunity to be there, and we were raising expectations for blind people all over the world, and it really was true that a lot of the guys and the men and women from across the globe came to the country, and they had certain expectations about blindness. A lot of them had the sighted companions with them. They had certain ways that they were used to doing things, and it was a really powerful thing for them to see blind people doing it for ourselves.
Yeah, I love that.
And, you know, and that's what we do in the Federation.
There
Every
you go.
Day we raise expectations.
Because we realize those low expectations that create obstacles between blind people and our dreams.
Exactly. And in other parts of the world, you know, those expectations are even more ingrained sometimes than they are even here in the United States. Of course, we've made a lot of progress in the United States, but arguably we were once like that as well. And
exactly.
Particularly in developing countries, it can be very difficult for blind people to get into an environment where there are high expectations. So mm-hmm. It was nice to share that with and to see the World Blind Union folks really embracing it.
Yeah.
And going from being a little afraid of it and thinking it was a little strange to really actually embracing it and you know,
And owning it.
And owning it,
and
exactly.
And I love what you said, too. You said that we have to remember that we were there once, too.
Exactly.
I think that sometimes we get so vested in the success we've had as an organization and how we've progressed that sometimes we forget that, yeah, we had to evolve from that space of low expectations, of lack of skills, to where we are now. So I think that's also important, not only just for the World Blind Union, but here in the United States, because every day people are going blind and blind children are being born, and we have to recognize that we have to bring them through that same evolution.
Absolutely, and we'll have more to say about that even later, because there are always people who are struggling, people who are born blind, people who become newly blind, and we have to remember that even as we are an organization that's very assertive about what blind people need and the path that a blind person can take, we have to lead people down that path in a loving and kind and supportive way so that they can learn by experience, yeah, and internalize it in a way that's natural to them.
And feel welcome. Yeah.
And feel like they're being supported rather than just being told this is the way you need to do things.
Yeah. So. I'm extremely pleased, though, with the power of the organization, you know, who we are, how we've evolved to be this force to make sure that blind people can live the lives that they want. And I think that sometimes people just miss that.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes regret some of the strategies that we have to implement because people disrespect who we are as an organization. And that's really relevant in our In the News segment. Today we'll be talking about, you know, Uber, which I think wholeheartedly is a tremendously dynamic, transformational transportation system that has really opened up avenues for me. But I think that sometimes people feel we should just be so thankful that we can't hold them accountable.
Right, right. It's always the holding folks accountable that people are uncomfortable with, but we have to do it because we're the only ones who, you know, we're the organization that can do it, and we try to do it in a way that's best for both sides, but it has to be done, and we'll talk about that in the context of Uber.
Right, so let's move to End the News.
All right, let's do it. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I am Chris Danielson here with Anil Lewis, and it is time for the news.
In the news.
Yes, indeed. And in the news, we're going to talk about Uber. Now, folks will remember that we had a settlement with Uber that was announced way back in April. Now, the important thing for folks to understand is this was a class action lawsuit.
Well, let's educate them even more. So the whole issue was around
guide dog
and discrimination, right, against passengers with guide dogs.
Right, exactly. Drivers for Uber refusing to take passengers with guide dogs, mm-hmm, for whatever reason or for no reason.
Yeah.
Just sometimes even just canceling the trip when they saw the guide dog and driving off. So we had this lawsuit, and the lawsuit was what's called a class action lawsuit, which means that the plaintiffs in the case, which were our California affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind and a couple of individuals, are allowed by the court to stand in for other people who may be similarly affected, the whole potential class of people, the thousands of guide dog users who would be potentially affected by this kind of behavior. And mm-hmm. So when you do a class action lawsuit, it's great because you get a settlement that affects the entire class of people, and you don't have to bring, you know, hundreds of individual cases. But the only thing about it is there's a process that has to be gone through, because everybody who's a member of the potential class has to be notified, and the court has to make sure that they think it is a fair resolution for the whole class. So the big news is that the settlement that we announced in April, which was not binding when we announced it, has now been approved by the court, the federal court that heard the case.
Hooray!
It was approved on December 6th. The court said, yes, this is fair. What Uber is being asked to do to fix this is reasonable, And so that has happened. Now there was.
So now there's no more discrimination against guide dogs.
Yes, it's magically disappeared. Yeah. No, no. Unfortunately, that's not the case either. Uber still has time under the agreement, which has just been approved, to take certain measures. So we're really going to see the effects of the settlement. Not that people shouldn't continue to be proactive about if they are discriminated against.
Exactly.
It's very important to go ahead and make the complaint to Uber and do all of those things so that there's a record of it. But as far as the concrete steps that Uber is going to be taking in terms of what they're required to do are things like notify the drivers through an interactive pop-up that it is Uber's policy that they will accept service animals and that failure to do so is grounds for being discontinued from being a driver for Uber. So that they have to do that. And
so it's a lot of training, making sure we're on board the driver so they know that it's their legal responsibility to take passengers with guide dogs.
Right. So we're really going to see the changes from the settlement in Q1, hopefully, as they say in the corporate world, in the first quarter of 2017 is when we're hopefully really going to see strong changes. And again, that doesn't mean that a driver will never discriminate, but it does mean that you will have immediate recourse. One of the things that Uber has to do, too, is they have to disclose to the user who complains what they did.
Right.
About the situation.
There are designated repercussions, so there are different
right.
stages. And I think Tim Elder, who's been kind of the attorney, my go-to around knowing what's going on with this particular piece of litigation, is going to be pinning a blog post soon?
Yes, he is. So the blog post will appear on our Voice of the Nation's blog. By the time folks listen to this podcast,
it will be up by the time we publish this. Excellent.
Right.
And if it is in time, we'll make sure we put it in the show notes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there you go. That's one piece of news about Uber. We also had a little dust up with them about accessibility.
Well, before we transition to that, I do want to make sure that everybody understands exactly what Chris was talking about. We need you to stay vigilant.
Right.
We've been successful. And for those naysayers out there, this wasn't about trying to get some type of financial reward for the Federation. It truly is making sure that individuals who use guide dogs can take advantage of this truly transformative transportation option without discrimination. There's nothing more frustrating than needing to be somewhere, planning it appropriately, and when the driver comes up and they see that guide dog and they drive right off. And this actually does happen. I've actually witnessed it myself. Even though I'm not a guide dog user, I've been with a friend and that's happened. And it's really amazing that they feel that they can do that so cavalierly. So we had to take action as a federation supporting the right of blind individuals who choose to use guide dogs as their independent travel aid to make sure that they can take advantage of this service.
Exactly. You know, the National Federation of the Blind supports the choices that blind people make and supports the right of guide dog users to use that dog appropriately as the law allows them to do. And Uber, you know, they did actually resist this initially. They mm-hmm. said, you know, we're a ride sharing company and these drivers are using their private cars and their contractors and all this stuff. But we were successful in getting the court to rule that is not the case. You are running a service where you are inviting members of the public into vehicles that drivers who are working with you, that are your partners, your driver partners, are using. And as such, you are subject to the ADA. We are not going to dismiss this suit and say that you're not responsible under the Americans with Disabilities Act and the other applicable laws. And that's an important lesson about the power of the Federation, that we were able to hold Uber accountable.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to bring a case in court and get a court to rule, no, we're not gonna throw out this lawsuit. We're not gonna say that Uber is just not covered by the ADA. We don't feel that that's appropriate. That's what the federal court said. That's how the National Federation of the Blind felt. And had we not brought the action, Uber would have just continued to claim that it wasn't covered by the ADA, and a lot of people would have accepted that.
And guide dog users would have been left with one less transportation option.
Exactly. And yeah. and that would really be unfortunate because Uber really has, as you said earlier, it is, and the other companies like it to a certain extent too, It is a transformational thing. I mean, I use it all the time. It has really changed the way that I get around as a blind person and allowed me a greater measure of independence. But we can't have that if, you know, if one of us is experiencing discrimination, then that affects all of us. Exactly.
And the beauty of it is, I think a lot of people would be surprised about it, is we're still able to maintain a fairly cordial relationship with Uber, even though with this issue and this next issue, it gets fairly contentious. We do hope to make sure that we move forward in the posture of integrity. And Uber recognizes, as we recognize, that partners and friends, you know, hold each other accountable. So the other piece of it is the accessibility of the app. I mean, if you can't order the car, if you can't set up the ride using the app, then the system becomes useless. And I'm very pleased with respect to the fact that Uber has been fairly responsive with respect to our concerns related to app accessibility. Can it be better? Absolutely. Are we working with them to make sure we increase accessibility? Absolutely. But sometimes there are hiccups in the road. Most recently, in the most recent significant upgrade of the app, Uber made some significant changes. And again, we tried to, as we do with all of our technology partners, encourage them to work with us during that development phase and not just bring something to us once they developed it for a sign-off. But unfortunately, that's what Uber did. This recent app upgrade, some friends of ours, Malcolm and Lindsay from Uber, came by. They wanted to show us the app. It was about a day before the release. So we courteously granted them an audience. We brought them in. Myself and Carl Belanger, one of our access technology specialists, kicked the tires on the app and pointed out some accessibility issues where if they would have partnered from us in the beginning, they would not have had those particular issues. We would have been able to point them out in a timely enough fashion for them to address it so that once the app was released, it would be even more accessible. That wasn't as much of the issue.
Right. What happened next was...
After the meeting and we gave them this feedback, and again, I have to go on record, I really appreciate Malcolm and Lindsay at Uber. They've done a really good job of interacting with us as a consumer organization, but unfortunately there's a disconnect where they don't really have enough internal, juice.
clout.
To make sure that the technology people who are developing are really more accountable to them and what they're trying to do. So they went back and they gave them the feedback. I feel certain about that. But then, unfortunately, on Apple Viz, which is one of the listservs that people give feedback on different Apple accessibility, one of the technology developers at Uber says, oh, we've consulted with the NFB about this app. This is after they started receiving all of the feedback from the users who were complaining. So they used us for cover. And, you know, we can't allow our organizational name to be tainted in that way. We have to make sure that we maintain a degree of integrity with respect to how we hold our partners accountable. So I then penned a blog post to basically express that, you know, we appreciate the courtesy of coming to show us the app, but that meeting was by no means an endorsement. It should not be perceived or represented as an endorsement of the app or its accessibility. It took a while, but I think we finally got a response from PJ, who was the technical development person at Uber, that was somewhat of an apology. But I do want to make sure that everyone knows that that's just the nature of what we do. We are making sure that we use whatever systems or strategies that we have to make sure that the technologies out there that make it easier for us to live our lives or increase our quality of life are accessible to us. And we do that in a way that we feel is respectful and honest and transparent. And hopefully Uber feels that it's the same. So we continue to hope to build on this relationship, to continue to make sure that this dynamic tool for transportation remains available for us as blind individuals.
And I want to say, too, that it's really important for people to know, because a lot of times people say, oh, NFB calls some of these companies partners and they get cozy with them and all that good stuff. And I think it's really important for people to know that while we try to maintain cordial relationships with our partners, because we do get things from that, not just donations and sponsorships, but actual cooperation on things like accessibility. We have great partners like Uber and Expedia, for example, that are doing really positive things. But we do hold those partners accountable, and it's important for us to do that. The NFB is not for sale. It never has been for sale. We try to do this in a way that's productive for everybody, because you know, the old saying is, especially down south where we come from, Anil, you draw more flies with honey than vinegar.
There you go.
But we do hold partners accountable, and we will continue to hold Uber accountable. And again, going back to the guide dog issue, as the settlement goes forward, it will still be important for everyone to
stay vigilant,
mm-hmm. and to take advantage of the settlement.
Yep.
And when this happens to you, there will be a complaint process, and you need to complain to Uber. And if the complaint is not resolved satisfactorily, if Uber doesn't inform you of the resolution as it's supposed to, then you need to be telling us, and we need to be prepared to take other action. Because another thing that's important, and that will be in Tim's blog post, is nothing precludes us from taking action against drivers who continue to violate if they're not, because it's not magic. You know, it's not like Harry Potter where somebody's going to wave a wand and all Uber drivers are going to stop discriminating against people who are blind and who use guide dogs. So this is a process. We have a mechanism in place to hold Uber accountable, and we will continue to do that. And we need the help of all of our members and supporters to make sure that that happens.
And that's the key. And I think the people should understand that our ultimate accountability is to the 50,000 members of the National Federation of the Blind. It's not to make us look good. It's not to build a tremendous coffer of revenue. It's to create quality of life. And if we're not doing that, then we're not stepping up to our real responsibility. So our immediate and really only accountability is to our members.
That is correct.
Yeah. And that's what's in the news. And the topic of in the news, along with all the other things we discussed, really kind of set us up for the discussion I recently had with President Rick Obono during our presidential privilege. And we've talked already about the informal way that we're able to impact individuals. We talked about partnership and accountability. And I think that it really bodes well for the fact that even without trying, we're able to informally impact individuals and develop partnerships organically. President Rick Obono just recently received a letter from one of his former college professors, and that was on the tail end of him writing a letter to the editor of the New York Times from an article that they published about a blind guy. You might tell us a little bit. What was that article?
Yeah, sure. The article was by a guy named Edward Hoagland, who is apparently a well-known essayist and author, at least in certain circles. I mean, he's been working for years, has won all kinds of awards. Not an unfamiliar name, you know, to people who maybe read more deep literature than I do. But he has recently gone blind, and he is struggling with that. And he wrote about his experience for a piece in the New York Times. The New York Times, in its Sunday Review section, is doing a series of articles about disability.
Okay.
And some are good and some are not. And unfortunately, Mr. Hoagland has a very negative view of his blindness.
Right, but I think that's in line with what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
We have to take him where he is and
Absolutely.
Help him evolve. And I think that President Rick Obono's letter was appropriate in that context. So we'll probably add that to the show notes as well. But in responding to that editorial piece, one of Mr. Rick Obono's former college professors found him out. So I had the opportunity to talk about that with him. So let's take a quick moment for the presidential privilege.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
All right, and we're back. And this is Anil Lewis getting ready for the presidential privilege. And it's my honor to be here once again in the studio with our national president, Mr. Mark Rick Obono. Thank you, Mr. Rick Obono, for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I think today's topic is going to be extremely important. I think that a lot of individuals who know the Federation recognize the power that we have with respect to policy, technology, and all those realms in which we make those significant impacts in the lives of blind people. But I think many people don't recognize the fundamental presence, you know, of the organization is really what has the greatest impact. And that's the fact that we're living the lives we want as blind individuals.
Right.
And I think that no better example of that is the recent article in the New York Times by Mr. Edward Hoagland. And it was brought to your attention. Gentleman, very bright individual, was explaining how he had lost his sight due to cataracts, I believe. And he without knowing the Federation, without really knowing our philosophy, had fallen into that downward spiral of society's negative perceptions of blind people, and he felt that now his life was changing and would have no real value.
Yeah, you know, it's tricky when blind people or people become blind who might be in a position of influence, say writing for the New York Times, and because of their misunderstanding, they automatically have a platform to sort of spread the misconceptions about blindness. And it's a tricky balance for us as an organization, because I'm sure that Mr. Hoagland's experience is authentic to him. He doesn't know what to do with blindness. He obviously has not really met a successful blind mentor who can share with him the tips and tricks that blind people use and how blind people travel independently and how we use white canes and speech technology, whatever else. And just the everyday idea, the philosophy of the Federation, the mindset that blindness is not what holds us back. So simply to dismiss him as misguided is not really true. I mean, his experience is authentic to him. It's just not the reality that he needs to live. And so how to deal with that as an organization is a little bit tricky, because if we just say this guy's a kook, well, all
that
of
doesn't
the
help
thousands,
him or help us.
Yeah, all the other thousands of people who are really blind people who don't yet know it are going to say, well, hey, they're calling me kooks.
So I think it was important. The title of the article itself was Feeling My Way Through Blindness. And that really kind of is in line with exactly what you're saying. He didn't really have a resource.
Yeah.
And he really was feeling his way through blindness. And it's unfortunate that so many people have had to have that experience. Me personally, when I went blind, even though I had blind siblings, I really didn't understand or know the empowering philosophy of the Federation. So I guess I was feeling my way as well.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the response that you wrote to Mr. Hoagland's article, which was published also in a letter to the editor in the New York Times. And we'll have this in the show notes for those who are interested in reading it. I think it was sensitive in respect to what you were saying, because I think you reached out to him through the letter, and hopefully we'll be able to follow up with him personally, offering him an opportunity to get to know us and who we are.
Yeah, you know, again, the goal is to try to get him connected and help him understand the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind, which has empowered many blind people to understand that blindness is not the characteristic that defines us and motivates us to go out and decide to live our lives. So the letter was meant to start to build that bridge. Then I've asked one of our members, Art Schreiber, who is a journalist in the past, is someone who lost vision at an older age, so might be able to connect with Mr. Hoagland in an authentic way. And he came to understand through the National Federation of the Blind that he could continue to live a full life. And, you know, of course, Uncle Art, as we like to call him, you know, he's written a book and he's done all sorts of cool stuff.
He hung out with the Beatles.
Yeah, well, that's in his, you know, his younger days when he wasn't as cool as he is now. But hopefully that will help to get to Mr. Hoagland. We haven't yet been successful in making that contact. But I'm also energized by the fact, well, first of all, that I wasn't the only one that responded. In fact, some blind people who, at least I don't know personally, responded with some very thoughtful letters. And at least one blind person, a student from Amherst, replied, had a nice piece posted, really getting out there expressing her point of view. And she's had some experience with the Federation. So that's pretty cool that many people jumped in to say, hey, this is not the reality.
Exactly. And I think that that's really powerful, not just in the context of, again, reaching out specifically to Mr. Hoagland. So it was good that that happened. But I think it created in a public space the dialogue that we know is essential if we're going to be able to educate more blind people about the reality that blindness can be reduced to a mere nuisance with the proper training and opportunity. So it really was kind of an open forum that exposed people to our philosophy, educated us more about our organization. And I imagine you probably got a lot of responses from your letter.
Well, I will say that a lot of the members of the Federation responded with appreciation for what we've done with this opportunity. And, you know, we've gotten flack in the Federation often for responding to things that happen related to blindness in the media or on television. But it's really an opportunity for us to spread our message and also make an impact in ways that we don't even recognize. Who's going to read the article? Who's going to be moved by it? I got a letter from my microeconomics professor at the University of Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
Now that, you know, don't want to... Seems weird to see this, but that, you know, that was 20 years ago.
Oh, you're killing me.
It was only 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know when you took microeconomics.
Stop it. Back when we were using abacus.
Oh, yeah. They were very microeconomics. Yeah. She had seen the article in the New York Times, recognized my name, which is shocking to me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Riccobono.
I'm probably not a lot of Riccobonos at the University of Wisconsin. You know, what's interesting for me is when I was in microeconomics, I double majored in marketing and economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mm. And halfway through my experience there is when I found the Federation. So I spent most of my time at the university probably being a little bit like Mr. Hoagland. I was faking it. I had no clue what was possible for me. And
you were feeling your way through blindness.
I pretty much was. Yeah. And it's fascinating to me that this professor remembered me being in the class. I wrote back and said, I hope that you remembered it for good reasons, because I wasn't a very competent blind person, I'm sure. And because I was still trying to figure myself out and what it all meant. And the interesting thing about it is in the letter, she says to me that, you know, I was the first blind student that she ever had in class. Mm-hmm. And she wondered, you know, what kind of teacher she would be. And she,
to you as a blind student.
Yeah, and she shared with me that she has had relatives in her life, some of whom she didn't know, great-grandparents, but she heard stories about who were blind people living the lives they want, mm-hmm. going out there trying to get some things done. Certainly before we had white cane laws and real travel techniques and blind role models, these were blind people trying to make it. And she knew that there was possibility because of that. And so she saw capacity simply because she had some frame of reference that was positive related mm-hmm. to blindness. And that is so important. So we hope that other people who don't really know anything about blindness may read these letters, may have a student in their economics class at some university, and although they don't know what to do, they'll think, well, there's got to be more possibility because these blind people have talked about it. So that was pretty cool. And then
that
to really
cool.
have the reality at the end of the year, especially with very reflective time, about, you know, we focus so much on the people that we interact with, especially those that pull us and push us and mm-hmm. ask us to sit on benches and wait and things like that. Mm-hmm. But what about all the people that as we go through living our lives every day, walking through the train station or going through the coffee line or walking down the street to get groceries, all the people that observe who we are and what we do and the impression that that makes on them or might make on them on the future when they come across a
exactly.
blind person or
exactly.
are blind. So,
yes.
you know, the best thing that we can do really to change the image of blindness is just live our lives every day within the philosophy, the can-do philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the most powerful points in what you just said was you were able to relate to Mr. Hoagland on a real level,
yeah.
Which I think is important. And a lot of people miss that. I have to admit that when I got to the point where I was really fairly competent with my independent travel skills, et cetera. For one brief moment, I had forgotten that I also was in that same space that Mr. Hoagland was. I think it's important for us to remember that and the way that you're able to, you know, reflect on your life so that you can, you know, lead him through the path he's following and
yeah.
the way that you're able to connect him with, you know, Uncle Art to create, hopefully, you know, greater synergy so that it'll be easier for him to internalize what we're trying to educate him about. I think that these are really powerful, kind of informal ways that we as an organization create such a tremendous impact.
Yeah, and just through the everyday work that we do, each one teach one,
mm-hmm.
and this whole outreach mechanism that we have through our grassroots membership is really the strongest asset that we have as an organization, and it's what binds us together as an organization and as a family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to publicly express my appreciation to your microeconomics professor and validate her at this particular point that you did an excellent job in educating this young man. He is a tremendous leader for us in the organization, so we appreciate the role that you played in getting him where he is today. So before we close, are there any additional comments you'd like to offer to our listeners today, Mr. Riccobono?
Well, the more that you demand more in the presidential privilege, the more we'll supply. That's a little economics closing.
Yeah, I got you. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. All right.
Or a chicken in every pot. No.
Well, no, you're not campaigning. We got to get through this, and then, well, that's another episode, ladies and gentlemen. But this, hopefully, conversation has expressed to everyone that's listening that you really can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back. Thank you, President Riccobono.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Charlene Smith, president of the West Virginia affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind, and you're listening to our national podcast.
We're back, and I really do enjoy having the opportunity to have those informal discussions with President Riccobono. I think they're enlightening and help us understand that there are people behind the titles that we have here.
Absolutely. I always enjoy the presidential privilege. I enjoy listening to it. I enjoy the times when I get to do it, and I hope that our listeners are finding what we're finding, which is it really is a good way to get to know our leadership. And, you know, what President Riccobono was talking about in this segment was so powerful. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of times it's easy to get frustrated and to feel like even with all the progress we've made, we don't have enough influence. One of the really powerful things that came out of all that was when the New York Times published Mr. Riccobono's letter, and it published it as the lead letter of all the responses that came into Mr. Hoagland's piece.
Mm-hmm.
But three out of the other four responses were also in line with our point of view about blindness. I think at least one of them did actually come from a member. And then the others were the same way, basically saying, no, blindness is not like this. We understand why Mr. Hoagland is where he is,
mm-hmm.
but this is not the way that blindness has to be experienced.
That's really refreshing. Usually our perspective is usually in the minority, so that's very hopeful, makes me very hopeful.
Well, and I think it shows that we're having influence whether we often realize it or not. Even people who are not members of ours have a different perspective on blindness than that they once did and are not ashamed to express that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was really powerful because, you know, papers like the New York Times can't publish all the letters that they receive. They do try to publish a representative sample, though. They try to publish letters that are in proportion to the kind of responses that they got.
That's great.
And the fact that we had in the New York Times a really overwhelming refutation of not of Mr. Hoagland per se, because, again, we need to welcome him and take him where he is. And we are trying to get in touch with him so that we can support him and maybe help him.
Join the family.
Right. And he will. And if he does, he will find ways to help us. I'm sure he's a very talented writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be a good relationship to have. And we are actively trying to do that, as Mr. Riccobono said that we would do in his letter. But, you know, it was just so powerful to have an overwhelming response of no, blindness is not the characteristic that has to define your life and your future.
Mm-hmm.
And you can live the life you want. And thousands of blind people are living the lives that they want. And that's really the message that came across. And it just really made me so happy to see that.
Well, it's a great way to end 2016, and we can continue in 2017 to spread this good message of the Federation. So I'm looking forward to all the wonderful things we will do in the coming year. I hope that our listeners are getting ready to formulate their resolutions. We love to hear what you resolved to accomplish in this upcoming year, so feel free to contact us and share that information. You can call us at 410-659-9314, extension 2444. You can email us at, is it podcast@nfb.org?
That's correct.
And let me see. Our Twitter handle is NFB. Oh, that's right. The @NFB_voice. We have a Facebook page, National Federation of the Blind. And what am I missing there, Chris? Did I cover them all this time?
I think you covered all the ways that folks can communicate with us. So I think you're there. And we'll get a recap in the voiceover at the end as well. So
there you go. And so, I'm loving this for all of you George R.R. Martin fans. I just want to reiterate what we were talking about earlier. Winter is coming.
Winter is coming. Hopefully it's not going to last 10 years or whatever.
This is true. And we're going to weather it through regardless of what Mother Nature throws our way, because in a true fashion of the Federation, we will continue on championing the independence of blind individuals. You have been listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.
Thank you for listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or feedback, send an email to podcast@nfb.org or leave us a voicemail at 410-659-9314, extension 2444. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter @NFB_voice. Check out the Nation's Blind channel on YouTube. And visit us on the web at nfb.org. Until next time, remember, you can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.